Claire Johnson.
And I'm Sam Gonzalez from the Sharp Sound High School Broadcasting Program.
This is KPFT Houston.
I'm not Leo Gold. Leo is taking a well-deserved vacation from months and months of dealing with the insanity going on in the financial world. My name's Otis McClay, and I will be sitting in for Leo, who, let me see, should be on the air. Yeah. Is that up? Are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, see, there's Leo in the beautiful Berkshires of Massachusetts. I'm envious, but I'm not going to say anything. We're just going to talk about the current state of the financial system, I guess. The last I heard, the Dow today was down 400, and Standard & Poor's was down, I don't know, like 30 points or something.
Yeah, stock markets are down today about 4% as they head toward the close, or actually do close at 3 o'clock Central Time, which it is now.
Right.
So markets really worldwide are all down about 4%. That's a large fall. So regardless of whether you're looking at the Dow or the S&P or whatever your favorite index is, markets are down about 4%. And to put that in perspective, you know, an average daily move by the stock market, either up or down, is about 1%. So the magnitude of today's move is about four times the usual volatility.
Now wait, but we have to add that into the whole past, the whole performance this week.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, markets are now down about 10% in total from, and maybe even more by the end of today. Equity markets, that is, stock markets, because everyone has to remember there are lots of different kind of markets these days. There are bond markets, and there are currency markets, and there are commodities markets. And so stock markets are just one of the kinds of markets. But, of course, people tend to look at the stock market, even though, by the way, the stock market is, in terms of its daily volume, dollar volume is a pittance, meaning the amount of dollars or total currency traded in stock markets is a pittance compared to the amount that's traded in, say, the bond markets, and even less, far less than the currency markets. Currency markets can trade literally trillions of dollars a day, Otis. I don't know if you know that. So in total, stock markets are down somewhere around 10% from their recent highs and are showing no return year to date. And so that's where they stand.
Well, now, what's going on? Just explain it all quickly in, you know, a couple of minutes. Just tell us everything that's happening. I mean, where is the money going? Are there any markets that are up? And, of course, the kind of the question is, with this charade that we just completed in Washington about this, you know, this artificial discussion about the debt ceiling and the debt and all of that, one of the things was, well, you know, we have to raise the debt ceiling, otherwise America looks bad and the stock markets will all fall. And now they're all falling after, theoretically, the Republicans, the friends of Wall Street, got what they wanted.
Yeah. Well, We'll see what comes out of the whole deal in Washington, and I think that a lot of the decisions that it looked like they were going to address one way or another, whether you liked the way they were going to address it or not, are being put off for the next election. But there's not a lot that I can add to what I think people understand. The the different variables and the different levers that the government has to pull between taxes, which Republicans are intent on blocking any what they consider to be an increase. Of course, we know that they prefer subsidies and things like that that really are either advantageous to interests or disadvantageous to other interests, and are actually forms of raising revenue. But
these are also actually expenses when they're not there.
Exactly. So whether it's revenues either going up or down, the other lever being expenses, and the other lever now being borrowing, which prior to this recent debate had never been brought in and never been explicitly or so explicitly tied to the issue of expenses and debts. I'm sorry, of expenses.
I think we've raised it 80 times since the law.
Right.
And out of that, I think there was one discussion.
Yeah, one knockdown drag out. And so this is now going to be a permanent feature, this debt ceiling. Now, you know, our country has in some ways brought it on ourselves. We've refused to raise money internally from our own pockets, from our own taxes, and so we've had to turn to debt markets to finance the government, and the government has done that in huge measure over the last 10 years. Of course, the national debt stood at a handful of trillion dollars in the year 2000. We're now at 14 trillion, and the vast majority of that has come from of course, the wars that we've engaged in, the recession as well, and then also the simple refusal to raise taxes has required...
Well, the Bush tax cuts themselves cost us a fortune.
Yeah, and it's not just 2001, Otis. I mean, there were a whole series of tax cuts that occurred during the Bush administration when the Republicans controlled the entire Congress and the White House under George W. Bush, the early years, Bush administration, the first term, rather.
The first 2003.
Right. Then we saw a whole series of tax cuts that were put through in 01 and 02 and 03 and, 05 and 06. It just went on and on. So... And those are the years that have coincided with the deterioration of the government's finances. So we'll see what comes out of it. In the meantime, what's occurred over the last week, literally simultaneous with this debt argument, this debt debate, and it couldn't have been worse timing, are economic indicators that are indicating the economy is slowing. And some observers say that the economy's hit stall, as if it's an airplane that's just suspended in midair. And there's talk about the double dip recession. And again, I always want to remind people that when you hear this, you've got to remember that means that, maybe the U.S. economy grows 1% rather than 4%. But it's still going to transact a huge amount of activity, huge amount of goods and services, Otis. I mean, $14 trillion a year is the baseline here. And so a 1% increase is $100 billion increase in activity. So anyway, markets are reacting to these things. They're continuing to react to the debt issues that are pervasive right now in Europe. They are beginning to react as well to signs of what might be a slowing or perhaps an overheating or a bursting of quasi bubbles that might have occurred in China, Brazil, these emerging market countries that have really been growing very, very rapidly. And so it's just been a plethora is the word.
That's a good word, yeah.
Of news that is impacting markets.
Yeah,
bond markets especially. Not bond markets. Bond markets are holding up. And you may recall in 2008, in the height of that crisis, there was only one bond market that held firm, and that was the Treasury market. You had corporate bonds that were getting completely destroyed in 2008. That is not the case now in 2011. Bonds across the board, whether they're government bonds or corporate bonds or mortgage bonds, are holding their own, and bonds are providing the diversification benefit that they are usually expected to do. So if you hold a diversified portfolio, I don't know, half stocks, half bonds, or even less stocks, more bonds, or somewhere in there, your bonds are performing. Now, probably not performing enough to offset declines in stocks, because if you get a if you hold a 50-50 portfolio, Otis, and you get a 4% decline in stocks and a 1% increase in bonds, you know, you still got to you get the point. So,
You know, for my naive understanding of deep finance, in which you are pretty much an expert, I have this sense that what's happening is that vast amounts of capital, vast amounts of money have been sort of sequestered, that they're being, you know, held somewhere. They're not circulating, so we're seeing, I don't know, values of all kinds of things drop. Does that make any sense? And tell me why I'm wrong.
I don't know. I mean, I tend to see the, you know, I see the world through the way I see the world, and everyone does. But I think that the, many of the issues on this show that we've been talking about for many years are really coming to the fore. And you and I were talking about this the other day when we were talking about you sitting in and co-hosting the show. The world, and let's just talk particularly about the United States. You know, China has not had trouble growing its economy because it started from a very low baseline. It wasn't a mature economy, had lots of had lots of room to grow. Same for Brazil and Russia and so forth. The United States is a mature economy, and people are now waking up to say, well, you know, what's next for us? And there are lots of questions being asked about, you know, what's next for our democracy? What's next for our economy? And many listeners of KPFT, we feel like we know what's next. It's the elimination of waste in that is so pervasive in our society, from waste of material to waste of human resources to you know, waste of entire communities. And so it's the cleaning and the greening of our economy. I'll just give you an example. You may have seen this, you may not have, but the Cargill Company, which is a massive agricultural concern, privately owned, huge, maybe probably bigger than Archer Daniels, issued a recall yesterday of 36 million pounds of ground turkey meat.
Right.
36 million pounds. Now, the entire annual supply of ground turkey, you know, love it or hate it, is about 450 million pounds. So they're approaching a recall of 10%.
Right.
10% wasted of the entire supply of turkey meat. Ground turkey meat, and this goes on every day in our economy where we have waste and lack of oversight, and so the problem is that, you know, we're really in the minority. We listeners to KPFT, we say there's all this waste going on, and energy's being wasted, and homes are leaking air conditioning, and turkeys getting recalled, and materials in the city of Houston are not getting recycled. We know where jobs can be created in the economy. It's eliminating this waste. But the people who are in charge, by and large, don't see this. And so when they talk about recovery, when they talk about creating jobs, you know, they're just talking about creating the same old jobs, Otis.
Right.
You know, let's get some more retail people at J. Crew, you know, behind the counter. And so the consumer economy is the economy structurally that has been built in the United States. It's all geared toward the consumer economy. And so the President and the Congress, when faced with 2008 and the years after that, their reaction is not always. The President has been talking about green initiatives. You know, my gosh, he's gone to General Motors, into these car plants. He's really done, I don't know about done his best, but he's done more than certainly Republicans in Congress have done to try to lead the country into the future. But, you know, he's got lots of opposition. And people who were determined to thwart that. So
I had this imaginary event back in 1947, after the end of the Second World War, and you know, previously to that, our military was not that big.
Yeah.
after that, and also, we weren't a major arms dealer. I don't think. I don't even know how big the arms market was in the world at that time. But I just envisioned Truman sitting down with these guys who made bombs, and they didn't want to change.
Right.
They didn't want to convert their manufacturing ability to something useful for peacetime.
Right.
They just want to go on making the same stuff.
Right.
And I guess we've inherited that, you know, this insane Pentagon budget and policeman to the world approach. that we have, rather than, of course, that money ultimately goes out into the consumer market because of all the people who work there. But their output is useless.
Right, it does go out there, but you know, this is the same as saying, oh, it's an economic boom when we get a hurricane and Galveston's wiped out.
Right, it all adds to the GDP.
It may be a good thing for the timber makers and Home Depot and so forth, but the net gain to the economy is a loss because we've destroyed physical infrastructure. And any time you destroy that much capital, you know, you're going to have to take a capital charge to rebuild it. And so you've put your finger on a major problem that we're facing in this economy, which is, we are just not making investment in areas where there is return.
I happened to watch an Inconvenient Truth a couple of nights ago. They were running it on Al Gore's network on Current, and I hadn't seen it for a while. And one of the things he showed was basically the deficit. And then showing how you could chip away at the deficit, it was energy cost, I guess, CO2. It was actually CO2. And he's showing how you chip away at the CO2, our CO2 input to the atmosphere by modernizing appliances, by modernizing the power producing infrastructure and stuff like that. And it seems to me, for instance, we know now that there's a huge amount of energy being absorbed by your TV box,
right,
or by the computer. These are all the LCD screen. These are all things that stay on even though they're not being used. And that total amount of power, nobody has really looked at that. And it seems that, boy, that would, you know, if we suddenly started developing, I'm just looking at different ways where manufacturing could, the focus on manufacturing, basically it ends up everybody's got to buy a new toy.
Well, that's right, and there has to be an incentive to do that, and our tax code has rewarded, let's just take the itemized deduction for deducting mortgage interest, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than giving people a deduction for mortgage interest, we could be giving people a deduction for energy efficiency in their homes, rather than debt interest on their homes.
There were some tax credits for that.
Some sort of tax credit in this area, and it's been done in a limited fashion. And every time the government tries to do it, you know, it gets pushed back and it sunsets. And the country has simply not gotten serious about moving into the future and seeing where its future lies. And you know, Republicans keep giving mumbo jumbo about, well, the market's going to take care of it, and the market will take care of it if the market is structured properly. But our markets are not structured properly. They're infested with influence peddling and subsidies and leakages.
Well,
and so this is why I actually am a little bit heartened by the debate that went on in Capitol Hill, because at least they began to talk about revision of the tax code. They began to talk about cutting military expenditures, and in fact, if this committee that they're putting in place does not reach agreement, then one of the two major areas of cuts is going to be the military, which was designed that way, Otis, to make sure that each side had strong incentive to come to agreement.
Right.
I'm talking about this committee of 12 that's going to be convened to decide on the cuts.
Question the constitutionality,
so we'll see. There may be some positive things that come out of it. Has been ugly, but we'll see.
Here's a question: Wall Street, and when I say Wall Street, you know, I'm talking about the world financial markets, the people who work in finance, and I'm including in that, you know, money and everything. Are they winning or losing right now? You can hear those wheels turning.
The answer is it's not totally clear. I don't like to break it out. You know, finance is an important part of any functional society. Energy, all these different sectors, the consumer sector, of course, is vital. They're all important, and we have to have a healthy financial sector. The financial sector has, in many ways, become too privileged. Due to various
right.
reasons, I think the big question right now is the large disparity in wealth in the country that has developed between
right.
those who are the ownership you know, for want of a better phrase, the ownership class, those who own stocks and own bonds and own real estate and have come to own, generally are taxed at a lower rate, if it's conceivable, than those who are simply working for a living and who have come to be taxed at a higher rate. And this is, you know, this is rather an extraordinary occurrence. And how long that can go on, I don't know. This, of course, is going to be the big fight in 2012, next year.
Yeah.
And so we're going to see how the country votes, because the Democrats are going to be running on letting the Bush tax cuts expire. Remember, if the Congress does nothing, those tax cuts will expire at midnight of December 31st, 2012. And if the U.S. has decided to, if the country has decided to vote in a Republican Congress, then that Congress will take their seats in January of 2013 and will simply reestablish those tax cuts.
Right.
So this, I think, is the backdrop of the discussion or the debate that's gone on over the last several weeks that's been so public and so ugly. Both sides positioning for the elections in 2012. And
instead
we'll have
of
to see
doing
how
their job,
we'll have
yeah.
to see how we'll have to see if working people show up at the polls.
Well, Wisconsin on Tuesday is probably going to be interesting.
Yeah,
that's going to be our first real, election, and this is in the face of a lot of resistance, a lot of roadblocks that have been put in the path of Democrat voters. Leo is in Massachusetts. Can I say that? In Massachusetts, at the beautiful Berkshires. I'm Otis McClay sitting in for him, and we are going to take calls.
Yeah, let's give out the phone number.
After a short break, and Scott is already on the line. Scott, I haven't forgotten you. He's been waiting 20 minutes. Yeah. Scott has an urgent chair. We'll take a short break, and then call if you have questions or comments. 713-526-5738 is the number, and now that you have the pen, 713-526-5738. We'll take a short break so you can get some seltzer, and we'll be right back with your calls and Leo in Massachusetts. And George Harrison brings us back, and Leo is in Massachusetts. I'm Otis McClay. I'm here, and Scott, thank you for patiently waiting.
Hi. I have a question. Would you agree that John Maynard Keynes is economics 101?
Good question. What do you think, Leo? I mean, I know what I think.
Scott, you know, there is, of course, lots of debate about what Keynesian measures should be taken right now. I'm in favor of targeted Keynesian rather than just whatever Keynesian. What I'm calling whatever Keynesian means the idea, and Paul Krugman of the New York Times, of course, much more brilliant economist than I am, he's won the Nobel Prize, is of the whatever Keynesian school. It says, you know, look, the government just needs to spend money, you know, wherever, let's just spend it.
He just wants to see it circulating.
Yeah, he's trying to get it circulating.
Yeah.
I've never been a believer in any kind of activity like that. I mean,
anyone
who listens to the show knows. I always want to know what are we investing in? You know, does it have a return? Is it an intelligent investment?
Yeah, Tim Pawlenty should have some, you know, experience in this area.
Right.
About maybe the infrastructure might be useful.
Right, and I think the president has tried to do this. He's tried to say, you know, we're going to put in the. And in the stimulus package that came out right after he became president, you know, there was some of that in there. I think it was a smaller part of that bill, Scott. A lot of it was aid to local governments and state governments and to trying to keep them able to pay their bills. So I would think that the targeted stimulus is a good thing. The General Motors was a targeted stimulus, if you think about it.
Okay.
Targeted Keynesian, and GM has just reported 94% increase in profits over a prior period. So I think that it does make sense for government to be making targeted investments. But I'm not a big believer in whatever Keynesian investment.
I grant I'm making something of a soundbite, but I think politics often requires soundbites.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Cool. Thanks for waiting. Let's see. Johnny.
Hey, I have a technical question, comment, I guess you can call it. Otis, with your technical background, maybe you can answer this question or someone in the audience. But you all mentioned earlier about all the wastage that we have, in particular the electronic drain from all the electronics that we have in the home, computer, TV, and whatnot. I'm thinking if, rather than having the industry sell us a whole new set of electronics, which is more waste as far as I'm concerned, why not we encourage people maybe to retrofit if it's technically possible for a regular person who doesn't have much skill, or encourage some people to go into business repairing electronics like Emmett from the Mayberry RFD days. That would be a lot more common sense to me than having everyone buy new electronics and then have landfill issues and stuff. What y'all think of that? And by the way, I'm also in favor of targeted, massive Manhattan Project-style reinvestment in this country and people, not willy-nilly buckshot like Dick Cheney did to his friend.
You go right. For WPA.
No, I think that's right, Johnny. We do need to see it happen, and of course there would be a debate in this Congress between, you know, does the government, does private industry do it? But regardless, I think people are looking at the economy and saying, you know, the consumer side of this economy has really in many ways played itself out. What the country lacks is an infrastructure. It lacks transportation infrastructure. Its education infrastructure is dilapidated. Our food infrastructure, a lot of people have problems with. Certainly my wife does, and you know, she goes out of her way to avoid the mainstream infrastructure. You know, I was reading an article today, Kraft Foods is going to split itself in half into its, you know, junk food division and I guess its other foods. And part of me said, you know, how is it that this company, which sells rather unhealthy food, is such a big company? Why does that make sense that we have unhealthy products accounting for so much money? So we've got serious problems in our infrastructure. And
you kind of raised it's a cultural issue having to do with advertising and the definition of
right.
competition,
right.
where we have, you know, 300 different kinds of dishwashing soap
right.
on the shelf. And, you know, you have to wonder, does that really makes sense.
Well,
I
like competition, Otis. You know, I like when somebody gets up and says, "I'm going to go into business,
well,
and I can make a better product." So, to me, it's not the number; it's the fact that the full cost of products are not reflected in the price.
Right,
you know,
which
people can purvey products that are totally unhealthy and advertise them, and then society has to pay for all the emergency room trips and the heart attacks and all this other stuff. So
right, I feel that competition has to a great. Let me say our number 713-526-5738. Leo's in Massachusetts. I'm here in Houston. I'm Otis McClay, sitting in for him, and we're taking calls, basically talking about, you know, I guess the fallout from this recent piece of theater that we were exposed to in Washington.
By the way, markets ended down about 5% today, so selling accelerated into the end of it as we were talking. And this is one of the larger losses in stock market history. You know, it'll
we're doing pretty well. The irony for me is that the Republicans wanted all this, and they're supposed to be the party of business. And I guess, you know, I assume that money that's coming out of the stock market is going to go into bonds or something else. I mean, it's not just going to disappear, right? Guys just took a loss on this.
It's not that money is necessarily coming out of the stock market. It's that people woke up today and decided that the market was not worth what it was yesterday. Buyers showed up and said, "I'm not going to pay Dow 12,000 today, I'm only going to pay Dow 11,300. Or 11,400. So it's not that cash changed hands. It's that value, perceived value, was less today than it was yesterday, and substantially so.
Yeah,
you know, almost 5%.
Right, it's down below 12,000.
So what that means is that the market, which is looking forward, is seeing things that it is more troublesome to it than it did yesterday.
Yeah, Philip, hi. Philip, you're on with Leo Gold.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everybody. Corporatocracy is what we have. That's what we have. You're wondering what we have? One word, corporatocracy, and it's not. There's no end in sight. And eventually, if you don't see it now, you eventually will see it. And if the magic snake oil that John Boehner is selling is that tax cuts creates jobs, where are they?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the history shows again and again that tax cuts do not create jobs. I mean,
that's what the snake oil they're selling. That, I mean,
well,
everybody's eating it up.
That's right. And you know, I skirted just personally just for a second ago, skirted on the idea of the idea of competition and advertising, and to a great extent, people don't really pay attention to the facts and the history. They pretty much react at how they're being pushed at any given moment.
We have a corporatocracy that demands growth every quarter, and have growth every quarter into infinity.
Right.
I mean, if every other country besides America, if everybody had the growth that America has, we would need 5.2 worlds of resources to support that. So it's unsustainable. We're on a sustainable course. It's like, you know, you're at 30,000 feet and you're nose diving at, you know, 5,000 feet per second. You cannot keep that up for very long.
Well,
you've got to pull up.
Okay, that's a good question, because that, you know, we have the myth of growth, and I know that Bill Greider kind of attacked that. And if you do the math on the idea of growth, if you grow 3% a year, whatever, you get into exponential issues where it becomes impossible. To Leo, comment.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you can't grow forever. At the same time, we have growth prospects in this economy that we're simply ignoring. And what may be the most concerning thing is that now we're capital constrained. We don't have the investment capital that we had before.
And yet the corporations have vast amounts of capital.
Well, they do. They absolutely do. And
the corporations are dictating our policies.
Yeah.
And you see by and large that the people want to have health care. They want to have, you know, green jobs. And by and large, that's been denied and refuted all the way through, and the people that are dictating our policies are corporations, so the politicians
wait a minute.
Get back in office.
I have to say, if some corporation saw where they could make vast amounts of money in some endeavor, you know, I don't know, you know, could say wind turbines, whatever, wouldn't they do that?
Yes,
yeah,
they
wouldn't
would.
They do that? In a way...
Yes, if you look at China, they are. They're going to be the wave of the future.
Oh, okay.
They are.
They're also having
all
problems.
The solar power, all the machines that make solar power available, they're buying all the machines because they realize the next evolution, the next industrial age, is going to be not on coal and making Model T cars and so forth, and making industrialized nation. It's going to be making green power available to the masses.
All right, Philip, I'm going to let you go because John's waiting. Thank you. I think that's kind of an interesting
Hello?
Question, the thing about... Yeah, hang on one second, John. You're on the air. You're on the air with Leo Gold.
Thank you.
You can go ahead.
All right, I've got two questions I wanted to ask. I read somewhere that China has been lagging when it comes to the field of innovation. But for the last 2 years, that the Chinese firms have actually been having more patents than any other country, and they're catching up to the U.S., or if not beating it. Now, what are the consequences if China leads in the science and innovation sector? And my second question was, you talk about tax cuts not creating jobs. I think it does, But let's not forget, corporations are holding on to more revenue than they've ever had.
Right.
And they're holding on to that cash, not because they're not making money. Corporations are making billions, but they don't want to spend it because they want to hold on to their power so that they can go to the lobbyists and get the president out of power so that they can have a field day like they had with a business-friendly president.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. Thanks, John. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Our number is 713-526-5738. This is the New Capital Show.
Yeah, I think Will's on the phone, on vacation,
and I'm sitting in for him.
Yeah, I think John makes a very important point, which is all the cash that is sitting on corporate balance sheets. When is it going to come off the sidelines? Why isn't it coming off the sidelines?
Well, I am as anti-corporate as anybody in Pacifica, but at the same time, they're entities that want to survive,
right.
And it kind of gives the impression that they don't know what to do with it. They don't know where we're headed,
well,
and so they're being very conservative.
And they have been saying that too. We want certainty, and unfortunately, you know, maybe they do to some extent. Maybe it is as John states, which is that it's more of a conspiratorial
Agree with that. I mean, I think that's there.
Yeah. But it's there all the same. Large amounts of cash on corporate balance sheets and an apparent unwillingness to create jobs, not just an unwillingness, but jobs are continuing to be cut. If you read the news, you'll see companies on a daily basis are announcing very substantial cuts in jobs, and yet productivity is very high right now. Companies are using technology very effectively and are outsourcing jobs as well. And so all of this is very troubling for Americans. As for China, you know, look, China's going to do what China's going to do, and an innovative China, I think, is good. China that's innovating in alternative energy is good. We want to see innovation in alternative energy. We'll get there more quickly, but it would be good to see our country innovating as well, especially since engineering is a core competence. And so it just strikes me that we have structural impediments. Maybe there are political, and I would think that they are at this point political in nature, that are preventing the United States from moving forward as strongly as we should be into these other areas, because I do think that the opportunities are significant and are enormous. Just look everywhere you see waste, and we see it everywhere. There's a business. There is a business improvement. There is an existing company that can do things better. And I get trade magazines and daily digests over email from Waste and Recycling News, and I like to see all the different things that companies are now doing. You're seeing regularly companies saying, we're going to get to zero waste, where our shipping processes are going to be zero waste. And it's happening, but it's just not happening perhaps fast enough to create the jobs. And then you add these other impediments in, and we've got the problems we've got, Otis.
At 713-526-5738, and Earl, patiently waiting. Hi, Earl.
Hi, Otis.
You're
KPFT's utility man.
Thank you.
Yeah, there was a great cartoon in the 1930s of it showed a rotten barrel marked capitalism with a giant imposing a barrel hoop to hold it together, and the barrel hoop was marked fascism. And I was wondering, you know, as conditions worsen, I mean, we've seen this in Wisconsin to some degree. Wouldn't it be possible for the Koch brothers to take the Tea Party and just turn it into black shirts to impose the Iron Heel on worker dissent?
I don't know. I mean, yeah.
I mean, that's usually
the
way it goes.
History suggests that these things have a way of evening out. I don't know that we've seen anything analogous to the Citizens United decision. Frankly, you know, just pouring huge amounts of money into. I was thinking the other night, what if you went to Europe, you know, because all of these guys we vote for are guys we hire, right? We're hiring them. We hired Obama to be the chief executive of the country, right? That's what we did. We hired him. We pay him. Are you all with me?
Yep.
So, if you went to an employer for a job interview and all you told the guy was that the other guy he's thinking of hiring was no good, I wonder if he'd hire you. Tell me about yourself. That guy is an idiot. Don't hire him. I mean, and yet that's how we conduct our elections. Right now, the predominance of the ads are these attack ads that just say the other guy's bad, but they don't say anything about me. And people eat this up. It's sort of a cultural issue. It says something about us as a nation. Possibly. I don't know. And what we have in Washington is everybody's playing to the election. You know, what's his name? Bush's press secretary wrote that book saying that the campaigning never stopped. It just went on and on and on. And in a sense, nobody makes a decision based on whether or not it's the best decision, which is actually what we're paying them for. They make a decision based on whether they're going to get their job again.
Yeah, and that's the frustration that often leads to fascism, because it's like, you know, the quick fix. You know, of course, you pay a lot for it. You don't have to worry about any elections under fascism.
Well, you know, I mean, I keep looking at what I mean, like the parliamentary system's really kind of interesting, because basically you have to be elected to have any serious power in the government. You know, the cabinet has to be members of parliament. And also it's a system that allows third parties to actually develop some kind of influence. We don't have that. I don't know. I see it as a cultural issue. But that cultural issue may be pervading the entire structure that we're talking about, the financial markets and everything. I mean, it's very easy to demonize all of Wall Street and corporations and so forth. There are exceptions, and it seems to me that there have to be some relatively competent people in the corporations who recognize that they need to be moving in a different direction. Because, Leo, when you and I first talked, you remember?
Yeah.
One of the points that you made about doing this show, a Pacifica show with the word capital in it, was that there are people in corporations, because corporations are composed of people. There are people in corporations who recognize that what they're doing is not maybe necessarily the best thing either for the company or the country. And one of the points of this show was to empower them in some way to, you know, have more influence in their corporations. And that makes sense. It's so easy to demonize them, and yet they are composed of people. There must be people that, I mean, there've got to be battles going on in large corporations today over what to do.
Well, we're all people. I do think the country is going to get there.
Thanks,
Earl. Companies are going to have no choice but to say, okay, you know, how do we get growth? I mean, look at Apple Computer. Apple is growing like crazy. You go into any store, and they've created something that people really, really want, people really need.
Yeah, they're becoming more like Microsoft every day, too.
Yeah, and that's the bottom line, is that any company is going to have to create something that people want and need.
But isn't that continuing the consumer-based economy?
Whatever it is, I mean...
Okay, be a big bulldozer. Okay.
Ultimately, everything is consumer-related. Ultimately, anything has to get to the consumer. I mean, that's a truism of any economy, that you know, even if you're selling large power turbines for use in power plants, ultimately, the ultimate end user is going to be a consumer in their homes.
Right.
But that's the problem, is that we've lost a lot of that intermediate infrastructure in the country that is dependent upon to get to the consumer ultimately. One figure I like is that we've got 10 times the amount of retail that they have in Europe. Not that Europe's doing that well right now, but you know, we're just over retailed. We've put huge amounts of capital into retail stores and our own homes, and we've ignored other areas of the economy. And I think that one of the things that's going on right now is that we're in this gap right now, and the economy is not transitioning fast enough to the next phase of the economy. That's put on the song All Things Must Pass, because that consumer-related economy's got to pass, too. All things must pass.
And I
think our leaders are hesitant to move strongly into the next version of the American economy.
Yeah, well, that's sort of quite. You know, if you're on a two-lane highway and somebody's, you know, the speed is 55 and somebody's going 30, he's a leader.
Right.
Because there are a lot of people behind him.
Right.
Hope, hi, you're on the air with Leo Gold.
Hi.
Thanks for waiting.
I know the Republicans don't believe in shared sacrifice, but this isn't this a form of it?
Whether they wanted it or not. In respect
of what? They're losing their money.
Are they losing their money? I don't know. I mean,
I think Hope makes a good point that you're talking about losses in the stock market. Hope, is that a form of it?
Well, I'm thinking that, you know, they're dividing the country up so badly between the rich and the poor, and they're saying that the poor have to pay for everything, even though they don't have the jobs and they don't have money, they don't have their houses. You know, poor people don't ask for yachts and mansions. They don't ask for, you know, for Rolls Royces. All they want is a home, a roof over their head, food in their refrigerator, and clothes on their back, and a good place for the kids to go to school, and maybe dig them out of the hole once, you know, in another generation or so.
But the rich people treat us like
we're more beholden to the country than they are.
Yeah, well, we are. We tend not to respect people who clean the toilets, but they're working and contributing just like guys who are getting paid a lot more. We tend to rank by jobs. Leo, you were going to say something.
Well, I was going to say I was at a backyard barbecue the other night. In a fairly well-to-do section of Massachusetts, sort of yachting area of Massachusetts, you know, where all people do boating and sail. It's a big sailing area, and I don't want to portray it as any sort of hoity-toity dinner. It wasn't, but there were some people in the banking industry, and I was talking to one guy who's from Merrill Lynch, and he's Republican, and we were having a discussion that was verging on an argument, but we both did pretty well to just keep our emotions in check. And I think that Hope's characterizing the Republican view of the economy as, you know, basically what I get, and if I succeed, it's due solely to what I've done, and a few other people have helped me. You know, I think that's accurate, because that's the philosophy I was getting from kind of a rank and file Massachusetts Republican. You know, I worked my way up from the bottom, and I got what I got, and
I never used a road.
You know, and if you don't do that, then it's your own deal. And I do think that is the viewpoint, and I do think that we do have a lot of problems based on that viewpoint, that there isn't this idea of a shared sacrifice or a shared destiny anymore in the country, and it's causing problems.
Thanks, Hope.
Thanks.
And Masood.
Well, first of all, let me say it's so great to hear, to listen to Otis and Leo Gold, my best friend, at the same time.
How are you, Masood?
Very good. It's a treat to have both of you on KPFT at the same time. I have a question. I know the capitalist economy is bankrupt. You cannot reform it. What's the solution? Do you think a planned economy is going to be a solution for all these problems we have?
Is this for me, Masood, or for Otis?
Oh, no. It's got to be for you.
You know, the president.
Well, a planned economy would directly impact our whole system.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole financial system.
The president was talking with John Boehner about some great grand bargain that would result in cutting deficits. My own view, I could live with a scenario where if part of the problem is we have such a divided country, we have a very divided government as a result. And each side's going to require something. And to me, the compromise that needs to be made, perhaps, is that there's some agreement made by liberals or progressives that the private industry will maintain the right to fulfillment of the economy. That is to say, creation of the jobs, creation of the businesses, management of the products and the services. You know what I'm saying, the fulfillment of the economy. But Republicans and conservatives have got to agree that the government will maintain the right to regulate the economy. And we don't have that agreement from conservatives now. No. Many don't believe in the right of regulation by the government. And so, to me, that's the only possible solution.
Well, can I jump in? I that wasn't my question. I said this is not the question of Republican or Democrat.
Yeah.
The whole capitalist system is bankrupt. I mean, it's not a system that you can fix it anymore.
Well,
but
I don't know.
I don't know if I agree with that either.
Any system is a capitalist system, Masood. You know, squirrels saving acorns for the winter is a capitalist system. You know, nature is a capitalist system. Every system, in some sense, is a capitalist system.
No. That's your version of the capitalist system. The real capitalist system is a system that works for a minority in every country. Mm-hmm. That's the capitalist system. That works for just minority. The majority are there to provide that capital for those minorities.
Quick question.
Now we are coming to the point that people are losing their job, they're losing their houses, there is no guarantee of tomorrow, and we see everything getting worse and worse.
Masood, let me ask a question. Tell me what you mean by a managed economy.
A planned economy.
Planned economy,
again, needs right people in the government.
And you,
at the beginning of the show, you said, unfortunately, let me finish that. Yeah, at the beginning of your show, you said, unfortunately, people are in the government, they don't care about the race of capital.
Some.
That's not because they don't care. That's their job. They're doing their job. They're doing good job at the government.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Safeguarding the benefit for the capitalists. But right now, the situation has got to the point that people are losing everything. Mm-hmm. Now, my question was, don't you think it's a time to think, not to do it right away, but to think about a planned economy? A planned economy is not for raising the profit. It's for what the society needs. Do we need big cars or do we need metro? And so on and so on. I can go on and on. Agriculture, industry, you know, education, healthcare. We need to have a planned economy that works for majority.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly China has gone this direction, Masood, and the results in China's growth have been impressive. There are many people who would argue that China's system has some inherent advantages versus the United States, being that they can set these plans. They can set goals and allocate capital.
But there was a little issue in China where they went to the one person per couple birth rate.
Yeah.
It backfired.
Right. Yeah.
Because they needed people, they didn't have them.
And I think your point is critical. I mean, everyone does planning. We have to do planning, whether that's in the context
exactly.
of a...
Let's forget about China. Let's have American planned economy. Forget about China. China, there's a lot of problem. If you want to talk about it, we need another 24 hours just talk about that.
Yeah.
I'm talking about American planned economy.
But here's the question, though, about a planned economy, Masood. This is the question that keeps coming up for me for all of these solutions. Who's doing the planning? Do you want Tea Party Republicans to be doing your planned economy?
Exactly. And that's,
they're bankrupt. They're not going to... Well, you see, they're not representative of the planned
economy. But they got in.
There were enough
of them to hold the thing hostage. When you talk about a planned economy, I mean, the government always attempts to do that in a sense the GM deal is an example of that, where we decided that we did not want to lose the auto industry. You know, so we said, okay, let's save the auto industry.
That was a trick. They
paid it all back. We sold the stock, but at a very bad thing. But they paid it all back. That was a loan that got paid back, although the stock we sold, apparently, we sold at a pretty ridiculous price. I got to let you go, Masoud, because it's over.
Thank you so much.
But that's great. Thank you. And, you know, one of the things that sticks with me to this day, there was the plan, I guess you remember, to put the Super Collider in Waxahachie, Texas.
Right.
And in its wisdom, our Congress decided that that was a useless thing. So it went to Switzerland, you know, now it's in CERN. You know, what he says, yes, it makes sense to plan it, but we've got basically people making these choices whose agenda has nothing to do with the health of the United States.
Right.
It has to do with their paycheck.
And I think that Masoud's point about planning is important. Planning takes place now in the American economy at all different levels. It takes place at a small business level. Anyone
yeah.
who is a small business person, KPFT has to make plans. It's a business. It's a nonprofit business, but it's a business.
We have to survive.
Yeah. Anyone engaged in any endeavor has to do planning. Masoud may want to see more planning from the top down, and I don't disagree with that. What I would like to see is more accurate government regulations that are science-based and economics-based. And if you do that, to me, that is planning. That's basically saying we're going to make sure that all costs are accounted for. You'll get proper reactions by the marketplace. Our problem right now is we have a quasi-market-based economy, and it's that quasi that's really hurting us.
Yeah. The question, what I was going to say about the election, the question is if we put people, you know, ideologues, people who are running based on an ideology, in positions of power, then we tend to, you know, get their ideology, which may or may not match
right.
onto
That's
reality.
Right. That's right.
Because, you know, does your vision map onto reality?
Right.
Do people work the way you think?
Right.
You know,
if punishment worked,
we wouldn't have anybody in prison.
You got it, Otis. And so that's why, to me, the only thing that lacks ideology is cost accounting.
Cost accounting, exactly.
Says, you know, it's science-based. Here's what the cost is. If you're going to have an agricultural system that's going to dump gazillion tons of fertilizer into the Gulf of Mexico and destroy the Gulf of Mexico, there's a cost there, and whoever is behind that business is going to have to pay that cost, or whichever consumers patronize that. So that's not communist or capitalist or socialist. It's beside the point. It just says capitalist system has to recoup its costs.
And this is what's so crazy. We only have about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
This is what's so crazy about what happened in Washington. You know, all of the evidence shows that cutting taxes does not create jobs.
Right.
I mean, all of the evidence shows that, and yet they just press on.
Yeah, anyway, it's just playing with financing, in my judgment. Yeah.
We have more to talk about, and we're out of time.
Otis, great to have you.
Leo, thank you so much for supporting me here.
Thanks for sitting in and taking care of the show.
And the new capital will be next. Are you going to be back next week?
Yep.
And Leo will be back next week. And this is, I'm Otis McClavin sitting in for Leo. This is the New Capital Show. And I recommend that you stay tuned for the news.
Hi, I'm Sam Gonzalez from the Sharptown High School Broadcasting Program.
I'm Victoria Oluwole.
I'm Gloria Johnson.
I'm Darnell Anderson.
AFS is a worldwide nonprofit organization that has been leading international high school student exchange for more than 60 years.
Each year, AFS USA welcomes 2,500 international high school students who come to study in U.S. high schools and live with host families.
We are looking for families in the Houston area to become host families to students arriving in August.
To learn more about hosting for the 2011-2012 school year, visit afsusa.org/host family.
This has been a public service announcement brought to you by the Broadcast Journalism Program at Sharptown High School.
This is KPFT Houston.
Listeners love KPFT and its programming. Pledge drives, not so much. So this summer, KPFT invites you to participate in a bold experiment and join the 10% of KPFT listeners who donate monthly to KPFT.
Visit KPFT.org today, click the Every Member Sustainer button, and do your part to increase that 10% of listeners sustaining to 100%.
With greater sustainer support, KPFT can give you more of the great programming you love. Sustaining members make KPFT's future income predictable and steady, providing the fiscal stability KPFT needs to have fewer pledge drive days.
$5, $10, $15, or $20 a month from you makes all the difference. So visit KPFT.org, click the Every Member Sustainer button, and become a sustainer of KPFT quickly and securely online.
You'll also be able to make sure your online donation goes to the credit of your favorite show, and you can pick out a thank you gift too.
Every Member Sustainer, join the club now at KPFT.org. I'm Gloria Johnson.
And I'm Sam Gonzalez from the Sharp Sound High School Broadcasting Program.
This is KPFT Houston.